kept compliant is one of the key values of the system. Wherever we speak about 42 branches across the country, and these are branches of FIDA that assist anyone who comes to FIDA and have an idea of small business. We also, with the incorporation of FIDA, FTP into FIDA, 30 incubators that range from furniture to jewelry and a whole host of sectors that are important with respect to small business. And these incubators, we use them to keep SMEs with ideas in that sector and grow with them to a point where we think there are SMEs that can stand on their own. And we've shown quite a bit of success. We exist alongside Kula, as the chair mentioned the Kula earlier, and it's ironic, but the fortunate part we all know is that FIDA is a leading small enterprise development entity in this country. It is understood that others will then feed in and be coordinated as such. And we've had numerous complaints about people not being able to access finance, and Kula has been serving that particular part of the business. We have been taking the overall assessment and assistance to SMEs with their business, from ranging from the product development, marketing, technical support, including finance. Well, we don't necessarily give out loans, but we assist SMEs in respect of managing the finances. So, as it were, FIDA is indeed a package to be leading at business support service. And finance and others are basically coming in to support that role. We have made major successes in this financially, with respect to performance issues, with respect to leadership and management issues, with respect to issues of compliance. However, the environment we operate in, Chair and Honourable Members, needs to be well understood. FIDA has a mandate to assist small business and coordinate SMME assistance programs across the country. We are supposed to be assisting in integrating the assistance that is given to SMEs across the country. That integration has suffered in the past few years in that there has not been a major voice for small enterprise development in this country. Legislation is in place. There's FIDA, there's Kula, the other provincial and local government agencies that are responsible for small business assistance. However, there's not been a powerful voice, be it in the political sphere, in the state as a whole. And I think all of us happen to just share the responsibility of assisting small business, and most enterprises and possibly departments are simply looking at the enterprise development in respect of compliance with the act that would give them certain points to show that they are part of transforming this country. But there has not been any major voice for small enterprise development. However, we do recognize the fact that the existence of the Small Business Council, from whom we expect that issues of small enterprises would again rise to the occasion. In this very report, you recognize that the then Deputy Minister Manturi says that most people and most business people, most policymakers, saying business, small business, is the backbone of the economy, of building the economy of growth and employment. However, the kind of resources, the kind of attention it receives is very minute compared to the statements that we make and elevate the small business in South Africa. We are hoping that with the stability of SEDA, while we are looking at an area where we're mandated to work as SEDA, we will be able to input to the council and assist and be assisted by various political formations and parliament in particular to raise the bar where small business is concerned. As I continue as chair, I want to say that the CEO would go into details in terms of how well we seem to have performed, but the organization is now geared up and ready to begin to deal with the bigger issues of small business, where we're not only concern ourselves with small business and a person coming and having an idea, but we should be able to drive the organization in assisting to lead in industries where we would make the impact, thereby saying that the SEDA would be in a position to concern itself with impact issues as opposed to just rushing after numbers and numbers. We have a network across the country, and that network can be utilized promptly to really begin to prioritize some of the industries that are important, that from which the country can make better benefits as opposed to what I've just alluded to. I want to say, Chair, the CEO would indicate, but I think you've seen that one of the difficult areas of cooperatives, in our case, private-public community, private-public partnership, we've made strides this year. We've been able to register some successes, which successes are beginning to show a direction that an institution like us need to be taking. I therefore want to give this opportunity to the CEO. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Switch off your mic. Before the CEO speaks, I'd want the other members that are said to join us to introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chair, and my good morning, everybody. My name is Freddy Adams. I'm a permanent delegate of the Western Cape.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Joe Munyambi, Mpumalanga Province.
CEO.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to all the honorable members. And before I start, I would like to introduce my team. We also acknowledge the DTI delegation led by the Chief Operating Officer of the DTI to the far left of the table. But just to mention that in terms of the SEDA delegation, to my right, I've got Lusapho Njenge, who is the head of organizational performance and strategy, and next to him is Mr. Ranjit Ali Motel, who is the acting Chief Operating Officer. Next to the chairman of the board is the Chief Financial Officer, CFO, Ms. Marilise Wochen-Doran. And next to Marilise is the acting executive for SEDA Technology Program, which we call the STP. Honorable Chair, if I may proceed to slide number 4, which talks about the performance highlights of SEDA, but perhaps just to pick up from the areas that the chairman of the board mentioned, I've been at SEDA now for just over a year, and I must say that we've got a very good team of management, a very capable board that gives us direction, that has, for the first time in the past financial year, we set a new direction in terms of the strategy, as the chairman was mentioning. rather focusing on the impact that we make on the small businesses rather than on the numbers and all of that. However, it is also important to mention that because it was the first year in which the strategy was being implemented, a number of the targets we were setting them for the first time. In other words, they were baseline targets. If I may continue then, Honorable Chair, on slide 4, you will see that in terms of our performance highlight, we talk about management. Under that, we proudly say that there's been a reduction of audit findings, as the Chairman was mentioning, especially considering the fact that about 2 years ago, we had a qualified audit opinion. I must say that we have a very strong and sound financial control environment headed by the capable Chief Financial Officer, who has implemented a financial improvement plan over a 2 to 3 year period, really focusing on the areas that were identified by the Auditor General. And we, for 2 years in a row now, we've got an unqualified audit opinion. The expenditure levels were 99%, in fact, just over 99%. We also, under this period, saw the full integration of the CEDA technology program, which previously was the DTI program housed at CEDA, but now the department has given us a go-ahead to fully integrate the CEDA technology program into the CEDA management and the interventions in terms of small business. Also, under service provision, we've increased our outreach to outlying areas. You will see that in the course of my presentation, we talk about the municipalities that we partner with. We also talk about other agencies of government that we partner with in the space of small business development. I also want to say that we also conduct outreach programs to outlying areas. This is apart from the Entrepreneurs Day programs that we run throughout the country. And in terms of the outreach programs, we reached about 3,500 people. The Entrepreneurs Day, we reached just under 5,000 people. This is over and above the 112,000 new clients that we registered at CEDA. Also, in terms of the rural enterprise development, as the Chair was mentioning, in August, with our former Deputy Minister Mantuli, we relaunched the Community Public-Private Partnerships Program. This is a program that was integrated into CEDA, but somehow it died down. But this is a program that we reintroduced. We launched it in August. And already there are about 37 collectively owned or cooperatives that we are working with under this program throughout the 9 provinces. In terms of service delivery, one of the areas that we're focusing on is to build a very strong frontline team. This is what we call our business advisors. These are the people who service our clients as they walk into the CEDA branches. So our focus has been to do a rigorous assessment and training of our frontline staff, and we can report that a total of 167, which means all our business advisors, were assessed and graded, and they went through our basic training of understanding a business, of being assisted to understand what kind of tool, how to use our tools in assessing and assisting businesses. And out of that 167, also 75 of those business advisors received international training through our partnerships in Taiwan and as well as Brazil. I have to mention that we do not even pay for that partnership. This is because of the relationship we have with these countries through the Department of Trade and Industry. So our business advisors who are skilled, who are above level one, who have been business advisors for a while, we're trying to strengthen them in terms of being able to assist your advanced small businesses, and these are the people that we take to this international training. And here, all we pay for is flights. Sometimes it's just accommodation, but the rest of the training is paid for by our international partners. We are also proud to mention that we have a learning academy within SRIDA that is driving this frontline training. We are proud to mention that our learning academy has been accredited by the services SRIDA. We've been given a thumbs up in terms of the content of the courses that we are giving to our business advisors as being the one that can be used as a model in the area of small business development. Also, in the year under review, we've attracted in excess of 112,000 new clients. This is now 94% of our targeted 120,000 clients. This is over and above our old clients that we've been working with. So what happens is that out of those 112 new clients that reach our branches, we do a further drill down, as you will see in my next slides, where we register clients now who are interested in doing business. And then after that, we further do a drill down in terms of using our tools for those who are ready to do business, who are sent back to do some form of research to in terms of the kind of business that they want to do. And further from that, we arrive at that figure of 23,874 that are now the clients that we are working with. Also, I did mention the Community Public Private Partnerships Program, which is a rural outreach program that we've just implemented. It focuses on cooperatives and collectively owned enterprises. Also, in terms of our service delivery improvements, we've developed what we call a client journey approach. In other words, we've done away with the old thing of just assisting clients once off. We work with a client for over a year just to track the performance. Hence, we are able to report in our targets that what is the improvement that we've made on this business, either in terms of the number of employees or the increase in sales and so on. So we've adopted this approach in our new strategy so that we are able to report the kind of impact that we do in terms of our interventions. We're also reporting that we've done an improvement in terms of our IT systems. We now have a state-of-the-art monitoring and evaluation system, which was implemented with the assistance of the Finnish funding, as you will see also in our financials, that we had about 6 million euros over a period of 3 years that was given to us through the Department of Trade and Industry by the Finnish government. But the focus in the last financial year from this funding was to develop a very strong monitoring and evaluation and the performance management IT system so that we can track our performance, we can get proper management information to realign, to redevelop, and to refine our interventions and management of the areas that we want to improve, especially around service delivery. Still on the service delivery improvements, Honorable Chair, we also track in the media and in the public domain how SRIDA is reported on to find out whether there's any negative reporting so that we can follow up on that. And we are proud to mention that in the entire financial year, the ratio of positive to negative mention was 126. Is to 3 in terms of comparing the positive to negative mention in terms of service delivery that is provided by SRIDA. Also in the year under review, we are happy to report that under the SRIDA technology program, 1,150 jobs were created. This is now through our incubator program. As the chairman was mentioning, the incubators are a protected environment which are sector focused, wherein small businesses stay for a period of anything between 3 to 5 years with specific skills around financial management, around how to access the market for procurement opportunities, for general running of business. This is one of the best models of making sure that small businesses are in a protected environment. So within that STP incubator environment, we're happy to report 1,150 jobs that were created. Also still under the CEDA technology program, we established two new incubators, the CEDA construction incubator. Also, it's important to mention that the construction incubator is the first of its kind internationally in the world. It has been developed by CEDA. It's the first of its kind in KwaZulu-Natal. This is a model that will be used for any other country that wants to establish a construction incubator. It's performing very well. The executive on CEDA Technology, Jayesh, can give detail later on if the committee members are interested in that. Also, we established an incubator in Limpopo, a jewelry incubator. Also important to mention under this period is the fact that the small business hotline, the payment assistance hotline, in other words, all the small businesses who are doing work with government who are having difficulties in getting payments which then leads to small businesses dying, we established a hotline. And in terms of that hotline, we were able to facilitate close to 28 million that was paid for small businesses as at the end of the financial year. But at the end of August, that figure rose to 178 million, which that was the value at the end of August, but at the end of the financial year, because it's important to create that distinction, that it was around 28 million. Also, in the period under review, there has been a 60% increase in clients that were assisted with CEDA services. This figure was 14,000 last year, and it rose to 23,000 in the year under review. Under clients reached, which is slide 7, you will note that we then do a breakdown of that 112 I was mentioning in terms of provinces, KwaZulu-Natal being the recording the highest number of people that reach our offices. This can be attributed to the fact that KwaZulu-Natal, we've got a very good working relationship with municipalities there, where we co-locate even where we do not have branches. We also in that province have more branches compared to other provinces. So it will be your KwaZulu-Natal, your Northwest, your Free State, and then followed by other provinces. Under clients registered, you will also see a similar pattern with KwaZulu-Natal also registering a higher number of clients that end up being in our books from the clients that come to our offices. The next slide, those are our clients working with. These are now the clients that are receiving CEDA services. It's 23,874. In terms of the statement of financial performance, the Chief Financial Officer will also go into detail in terms of this. The period under review, we received in total 484 million compared to 555 in the previous year. In other words, 2008 and 9 was 559. The year under review was 484. There was a drop in terms of the budget that was allocated to CEDA. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we have recorded 99.9% expenditure levels. As I mentioned, with the assistance of the Chief Financial Officer, strong financial controls, monitoring of expenditure, which must coincide with performance, is one of the things that we check very carefully. The following slide, Honorable Chair, on slide 11, this is just now the ensuing years 2009 and 10 up to 2012 and 10 in terms of the increase and that SIGA will receive in terms of budget allocation. Our future plans, Honorable Chair, is that what we've discovered is SIDA, I think the Chairman mentioned earlier on that the duty of SIDA when it was established, or rather the mandate, was to make sure that we integrate all the services, we establish the network, but because of the lack of funding, we are not able to establish any new offices. However, what we do is to work very closely with local municipalities, as you will see in the slides that follow, where we co-locate, we establish partnerships with them, we work with them on their LED programs in terms of SME development. And we see that is working very, very well, and it's something that we want to strengthen, even in terms of rolling out of the community public-private partnerships, as well as looking at other entities that can provide procurement opportunities for small businesses on a large scale. Also, in terms of refining our model, the board has given us a task to look at a number of sectors that we can exploit for the benefit of small businesses where we already have an advantage, either in terms of the industrial policy as set out by DTI or in terms of the sectors that we already have in terms of our incubators. So we will be looking at sector prioritization. Of course, we'll be looking at LED programs, but this is something that the board has asked us to do. Also, something else that we continue to do, as I mentioned earlier, is enhanced communication and improvement of access to information. We're planning to continuously do these outreach programs. We also continuously will be doing our entrepreneurs days and entrepreneurs month to just make sure that the country rallies around this issue of creating an enterprising nation and also making sure that people are aware of the services that SIGA and other agencies are providing. Also, you will see in the annual report that the Auditor General asked us to look at narrowing down our indicators to focus on, to differentiate between strategic and operational. This is something that we're working on so that it improves our reporting, it improves what we place as strategic compared to what is operational. In slide 13, Honorable Chair, we thought we must highlight our good partnerships that we have with the provinces. The provinces in the year under review were availed in excess of 12 million for the projects that we do under LED, under our partnerships that we have. As you can see in that slide, provinces such as Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape and Western Cape are the provinces that are giving us a lot of funding due to the nature of the partnerships that we have. And you will see that in provinces such as Gauteng, we've just started, we are in discussions with the Gauteng Enterprise Propeller as well as the Western Development Agencies, but we are far ahead in terms of other provinces. And these things vary from province to province, depending on the appetite of a local government in what they do in their LED program. But this is one of the things we are proud of to say we're working very well with municipalities and agencies of government in the provinces in terms of small business development. In addition to that, Chair, we've got, in terms of provinces, we also do what we call co-location. This is when municipalities give us a free space. We don't rent. We don't pay electricity and water. What we do, we bring our people. We look at what kind of LED programs that they have in respect of small business development, and we jointly do programs together. So that is a breakdown of the provinces. If you see on the far right, we mention even those municipalities that are working with us. We've got Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal and Northern Cape, you'll see we've got the highest numbers of co-locations followed by other provinces. In terms of the CEDA technology program, we also have a similar arrangement. We've broken down those 30 incubators into how many we have per each province, and we also detail which ones are of these incubators do we have a direct working relationship with municipalities. Some of them are provincial government agencies that we work with in the space of incubator and sector development. In terms of community public-private partnerships, I did mention earlier on that we already have 37 enterprises that we're working with at different stages. Some of them we've just started working with them. Some of them were already having a project with them. One of the good ones is the one we launched in Oxford in KwaZulu-Natal, where we assisted them with a lot of things, training, drip irrigation, supply chain. They are producing agricultural products, and we also assisted them in making sure that Pick and Pay, OK, and Boxer stores buy their products. So they've got very good supply chain. They are selling to the local big stores there. So it's a very good program that we've implemented, but we're rolling out to other provinces depending on what's in their LED programs, and also depending on the type of sectors that those municipalities want to focus on. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think we are ready to take questions and comments from the Honorable Members, and depending on the nature of the questions, my team here will assist in responding to the questions as well as the chairman. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much. Before we send in some questions, one member would introduce himself.
Okay, Chair. My name is Colin Mayin, and I'm sorry, I had to start the programming.
From the Northwest. Honorable members, it's the time now to ask some questions. I see Honorable Lee, Honorable Dikhale, Honorable Abraham, Honorable Mugoni, Honorable May, Honorable Nyambi, Honorable Pandinga. In that order, Honorable Liz Dikhale, Abraham, Mguni, Maine, Nyambi, and Pandinga.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to CEDA for being with us today and telling us a little bit about their organization. It's interesting that there is some emphasis in your report on an outreach program. You opened an office across the street from my office in Ladysmith a few months or a year ago, and I can tell you that most people in Ladysmith still don't know what this office with the CEDA sign outside is. I had to, at that stage, make my inquiries, because even I didn't know. So I think that's critical. It's absolutely critical if you're going to achieve your very good target. Let me say that. I'm really behind your objectives. Communication to people is vital. Now, the SCP program, you say you inherited from the DTI. I trust that the staff went with the program and that the DTI staff now aren't sitting picking their noses, and the funding went with it as well from DTI. In terms of the officers, the 160-odd advisors, but how many branches do you have throughout the country? It's clear that you have a lot in KwaZulu-Natal, one opposite me, my office in Ladysmith. I'm just trying to get a feel of how many advisors you've got in each location. The learning academy that you're very proud of, why did you go that route? What is the cost per student to you, as opposed to actually partnering with a tech or a university to provide that training for you. You were properly geared for it. Why did you decide to go in-house on that? The increase you just set out to say in the beginning, and I really do appreciate that, that numbers aren't the critical things, it's successes which are critical. So you talk about a 60% increase in clients assisted, and one wonders whether these are clients, how many of these clients walked in and said, what does this office do? Will we give business support? I'm looking for the doctor. I'm being a bit facetious, but I'm saying, how many of that 60% were really just walk in, walk out, and how many were really serious clients? I'm curious to see that you earned 14 million in interest, which means that given the current interest rate and a very quick mental calculation, and I'm over 50, so forgive me if I get my numbers wrong, but you probably got about 250 million invested somewhere. Why is that money not being used and spent? Is it just your working capital which is invested in short-term investments? You talk about at one stage, and I don't think you actually wrote it down, but you said no new offices. But I've just told you about the new office opposite my office. It's in Mnambiti Municipality. I'm a little uncertain about what your plans are with new offices. And then you're partnering with municipalities. I think most of us, from whatever political persuasion we come, acknowledge that municipalities, especially in rural areas, are very challenged, to leave it at that. Some of us might say that many are dysfunctional. And I'm hesitant to hear you talk about putting additional responsibility on municipalities and partnering with them, because this, your field of operation is really so critical to our future in terms of economic development, that I really don't think it's wise to use an entity which is already backing. Just following on, there are 18 institutions in KwaZulu-Natal working with you in terms of slide 813, I think it was. Do you know who they are? Which municipalities and stuff? I look forward to speaking to you next year about the Kokstad one. My view is the co-ops are doomed to failure. I don't know if you're aware that over the last 15 years, there are 5,000 odd co-ops that have been registered, and at least 4,000 of them are no longer operating and have failed. And the reason for the failure is partly going to be the support you're going to be able to give them, but the real reason is the entrepreneurial spirit is destroyed when you've got a group of people, some of whom work hard, some don't work so hard, and so the ones who work hard say, well, I'm sorry, I'm not working hard. That's exactly what people say. And so, co-ops, I hope you don't put too much emphasis there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by congratulating Frida for the good work that they are doing.
Yeah.
Because even in the holiday started, and we are thankful. On the point of the co-location, I think the people who are suffering are the ones in the rural areas. Why can't CEDA consider moving to the tribal offices? Because there's electricity, there's water, and they'll be able to see what is happening in the rural areas. And again, as we agree that the small projects are the backbone of the second economy, what is it that CEDA can do in order to help our people in the rural area so that they don't fork out money when they have to register their police corps? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Slide 6, the CEDA technology program. I've seen that 1,150 jobs have been created. If they can give us a breakdown, especially on the youth, women, and people with a disability. And then also slide 13, I'd like to know why no funds was received from Caltech and the institution partnering with on financial support. What is the left that you can't form their partnership? And then also, yes, I want to say yes, well done to Sierra, but if they can also just work on special plans for people with a disability, because there's a lack out there that nobody cares. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I cannot overemphasize the fact that a small business, as the Honourable has said, are the key backbone of our economy and also the most entities that create jobs. Give economic opportunities to especially small entrepreneurs. you said you've got more than 112,000 clients. Of those 112,000 clients, how many clients really are able to make it? You know, they graduate from not being just clients, but they register businesses, they've got their businesses now having income and sustainable throughout, let's say, 3-4 years and so. How many of those are the 27 clients that you registered this year, except those that you didn't count? And my second point, Chairperson, is on the issue of the Finnish government. We've got in the Free State, or there's an office in the Free State, Mashaving. I've seen you also, you've mentioned one that you've coordinating with, or rather, you've co-location with in Kwakwa, but there's one in Machabeni municipality, of which about 3 of the staff members there, they said that they were paid by the Finnish government. Their funds or something was raised, that was there in June. I don't know what's happening with the Finnish government, the project in the Free State. I just want to find out with CEDA of those 3 staff members who've been seconded to the CEDA. In Velcom, in Machabeng Municipality, from the Finnish office, because they said they have suspended the project from the Finnish government. Can you just explain all that, if you got any knowledge about that? And lastly, Chairperson, is the issue of training, financial training, because most SMEs that I've come across, they lack financial training, and also how to project or make their business plans. How often do you have those training? Let me rephrase my question. How many of these 112,000 clients are mostly trained on financial management and business management?
Thank you, Chair. My question is on slide 13 on the Northwest. I see here that there's nothing in the Northwest not funded, and this is the same story for last year when CEDA was here. Can I be clarified on what could be the problem? It's not so far that it's not reachable from Pretoria. My other question, Chair. I'm tempted to say, Chair, but again in the 315 in the Northwest, if my memory serves me well, this thing of discussions ongoing with municipalities was the same thing last year. How long is the debate of discussion? so that people of the Northwest can also benefit. I think the other point has been made by Honorable Dehada of consideration of using tribal offices, which I think CEDA must consider. The last point, Chair, would be on slide 6, there's 27 million or 28 million, around the figure. payments to SMEs. If I could be clarified in terms of my province, but not what, how much and how many SMEs have benefited from this amount. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join and welcome the presentation. From 2004 to 2010, it's clear that there is serious improvement. So it's something that is good and very positive. And but that as it may, it does not mean that we can't do more. There are a lot of things that we can do. So we congratulate you for the opinion that you got from the AG. My first question, Chair, is I saw in your report that you have one board member for this year that is under review. She has not even attended a single meeting. I think three or four times it was just apologies, then the rest it was resignation. She has not attended a single meeting. What were the reasons? How you handled that situation? And if you can even try to give us a little bit of elaboration, the impact of that to the proper functioning of the board. The second question, we know that the government pushing that the Palama, formerly known as Zambi, is the answer to the challenges we are facing. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it is the only solution. So maybe to get an understanding, the link between your learning academy and Palama. The third question, a little bit of the background of the irregular expenditure that is more than 3 million. If you can clarify that one, what really happened, then maybe we can come back and try to deal with it with information, because I don't want to preempt what you might be presenting to us, because I might end up being clarified. The last one, from the AG, if you go to page 74, where it's talking about the plan and reported indicators not well defined. Well, the CEO, we have tried to touch it a bit, but the implications of that, according to the AG's opinion, is that it has a bearing in terms of your number of clients trained and the percentage of clients accessed by business advisors through improved assessment and the number of new clients attracted. So if we agree with slide 84, if we agree with the findings of the AG, it means if we can go and check slide 5, that you say you have 167 business advisors assessed and graded, 75 business advisors trained as a result of international partnership, even the 112,000 new clients attracted. If page 74 is correct, my interpretation of that page 74 is that you might find that it means a lot of what is in page 5, slide 5, might be wrong. I need a little bit of clarification so that we can have a common understanding. But I must say, from where we started and our emphasis that we are representing provinces in the National Council of Provinces, how you have captured the province and how you have presented the report, it's very encouraging, and it's assisting, it's making it simple for us to engage in terms of our own province, and we can even come with suggestions of how to take it forward. And we have conference offices, and if the information can be made available to members so that we can assist, like to be very practical, I'm from Mpumalanga, I'm from Komazi, and Malelane is in Komazi, And at no stage I can say you have to go to a village, because in Nkomazi we have got almost 30 villages, and Malelane is central. It means all the villages have to come to, because if you can go to one village, you'll be disadvantaging other villages, and there's no way that you can go to all the 32, but it's central to be in one. But we can be of assistance in terms of distributing the information so that the people can come to Malelane. But if you can clarify the question that we are posing, and I'm convinced, Jefferson, that there's more that you can do, as Mbunia said, that small business is a backbone of dealing with the challenges facing our country. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you for the visit, and congratulations to the CFO. It says her system is in place. And the financial systems are good, in other words, but that doesn't mean that the rest of the business is so good. I had the same debate with my own municipality, who said they got a clear audit, and this is not a clear audit yet. But it's certainly good. I want to ask a couple of questions. Slide 5. We talk about 167 business advisors and 75 advisors. Is that 75 in addition or out of the 167? If I add the two and I deduct it from the number of staff members that you indicate on page 78, I find that there's 321 left. Where are they and what are they doing? I just need to know. In other words, when we then go on to your co-location partners, especially on slide 740, I look at the municipalities and I'm wondering how many people are sitting in the municipal offices assisting the LED offices, because I know of municipalities where we could really use more of your staff, because our LED offices are officials are so overloaded. I also want to know what are they doing there, because the co-location is very much a problem in many municipalities where it comes to space. There's hardly enough space, for instance, in Koha municipality for the municipal officials, so I don't know how they can still bring in other people, although, you know, a co-location makes sense. It's like 13 for funds leveraged from provincial partners. I'd like to know who the partners were in virtually every single case, because it looks good in some, and as my colleague here said, there are some constraints in others. And then in slide 15, I lost you. I wanted to ask you whether it was Kokstad or Umtata in the top Eastern Cape one. And I don't know whether you said, and then I lost concentration because I wanted to interject and I thought it wouldn't be the right thing. So if you can tell us what is happening there. And when you say you're working on a new incubator, it will help if you can tell us what incubators you want to start where. And yes, I think that for the time being is sufficient, because I was covered by most of my colleagues. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair. Chair, no, thank you very much. Chair, let me also, you know, I'm covered mostly, but just one or two points that I want to make is to say that I heard my colleague has now thanked the CFO, but, you know, as a sportsman and as a team player, there's a captain in the team, and I think the CEO is the captain of the team, and the chairman is the coach of the team, and we want to say congratulations all around, because it's a team effort. You know, if one spends and the other one does not keep tabs, and CFO can sit night and night on with fighters, but it's a well team effort, so congratulations to the whole team in that regards. Chair, you know, as in the NGO team, we are, most of our work are provincial based, as we represent the provinces in National Free of Government. I would just like to ask the CEO if it's possible if we can have the breakdowns, Chair, of the provinces, of what was done in the provinces, who these incubator programs have been allocated to, and what are they as well. Because I've seen the Western Cape, there's two technology programs. I'd just like to find out who benefits from that. But everything that goes with the provinces, and with your permission, Chair, if they haven't got it at hand, if you will allow them to post it to us or to send it to us in writing and that. Thank you, Chair.
I'll see you with just a few questions. Starting with, you know, the committee last year in November visited KwaZulu-Natal on oversight. I started by checking the progress on the Mtuba-Tuba community. You know, some of my colleagues have said this. China's GDP comes mostly from SMEs, and that is why we're learning from China. What are we? Are we just talking at? Do we have a plan of really, you know, taking the SMEs really serious and contributing to the country's GDP? And what is that plan? The issue about cooperatives has been raised. They've never had a very good record. It's not good, it's not bad, it's really poor. But what motivated is the relaunch and then using the cooperatives, taking into account the really poor record of cooperatives. The issue of the irregular signature of 3.6 has been raised. Why is it irrecoverable? Of the total allocation of this fund, what is the percentage? You know, or the personnel, I see, use 169 of your 484. My arithmetic doesn't allow me to calculate the percentage. I just want to check. Of the 484 allocated, how much is really used for service provision? Percentage-wise, whether it used 169 to pay salaries, use whatever amount for anything except services. I just want the clarification. And what, in 2077, what motivated the increase on the liabilities? I saw there was an increase from the previous year. You talk about partnership between the provinces with municipalities. What about the private sector? What about BUSA? What about NAFCOC? A few weeks back, I had a meeting with NEF and NAFCOC because they wanted partnership. Why go that far? You seem to be having a partnership with government institutions, whereas you are also a government institution. Why not the private sector? You know, from my constituency, which has a very bad name, I've got to travel 50 kilometers from there, or people travel 50 kilometers from there to Melmoth. From Melmoth to Mpangeni, another 50 kilometers. From Mpangeni to Richards Bay, 23 kilometers. And that's roughly between 123 and 150 kilometers to a CEDA office. Now, how would that assist my constituency? You know, if communities have got to travel between 123 and 150 kilometers to a CEDA office. I haven't heard anything about any use of consultants. Maybe they will fit in into that question of the amount that is used for personnel. Because last time I made a request, because in my hometown now, not in my constituency in Kinginhlovu, one person laid a complaint with me. You are called by CEDA Richards Bay to an appointment, had to drive 70 kilometers and spend 3 minutes to say, now we are arranging a meeting with you, which day it will suit you to meet the consultant. Agreed on a date, then he went back. So that was the type of service that the person got. So how are you minimizing consultants? We'll come back with the second one. But lastly, if something is good, it's good. Generally, thanks for the unqualified report. It's good. Because if it was otherwise, we'd really be jumping on top of this table. CEO, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Some of the questions, like on the specific branches, like Lady Smith and so on, I would leave to the Chief Operating Officer to respond. The question on the how many advisors per location out of the 167, the 167 is the total number of businesses that we have throughout the network. And in a particular province, there's an average of 4 to 5 business advisors. In some instances, 3, depending on how big the branch is. The cost per student, I don't think we have that breakdown. However, I do want to mention that we've got to understand that the space of small business is not, it is not a an area that has properly developed in South Africa. So I think the chairperson did mention the fact that FIDA is that one institution that has got to elevate the agenda of small business development. So having said that, there is no one institution that even a university that can say they have a course or practical training, to be specific, in relation of small business in the manner in which CEDA previously, in terms of the S12 institutions and now, have amassed the knowledge around small business development. Yes, we are not perfect, we are developing, but we are one of the institutions that can talk on the in the area of small businesses. We work with universities because obviously they do know how and how to impart training, but the content of the training in terms of small business development, we believe we do have that knowledge, working with our international partners in terms of institutions that have played a role in terms of this area. The 60% clients assisted, I did mention that how many were walk-ins. If you recall, I said that there were 112 clients, and out of that, there's a drill down. There's a drill down because when people walk in, it does not mean that all of them are running businesses or will run businesses. We use our tools to further test the idea, to test their skills, to test whether they need to go back for a training session, and so on and so on. And that conversion rate is usually anything between 40 to 50%. We predicted that it would be around for 40%, but it increased. So in other words, the 60% is referring to a drill down of the clients that we worked with last year, which was around 14,000, and it increased in this year under review. So I think that there is a difference there. So in other words, there are people who will come to a branch, who will reach our branches. Out of that number, we ask certain things, we test certain things. Out of them, we'll fall away. They will say, I don't think I'm ready to start a business or whatever the reason is. But others will register. They will either go through our training. Others, if they're already in businesses, will use specific interventions, whether it's access to markets, whether it's training on business development, or whether it's assisting them with plans, or whether it's assisting them to facilitate access to finance.
So out of that clients registered, the ones that are coming for the first time, you find that some of them, even though they are registered, they are not ready to start a business. But out of that number, then we come to this figure called clients working with, which are now the people that are receiving our services. And we are reporting an increase in terms of the people that we are working with. In other words, that are clients that CEDA is working with. There was a question on the 14 million rand interest. I will leave that to the CFO to respond. The partnering with municipalities, there was a question around the fact that we are adding additional responsibilities to municipalities. Let me correct this and say the manner in which we work with municipalities is that we don't ask them to implement our programs. It's the other way around. They've got energy programs. They've got funding for specific programs. What we do, we work with the municipalities and decide what kind of programs are planned by the municipalities for that particular area. So if there are small business development programs, then in certain instances, municipalities would say to us that we do not have the capacity to implement small business development programs and ask CEDA to implement. And this kind of an arrangement, I think it relates to the other question that was asked about Northwest. And perhaps this is an area where we can ask assistance from the honorable members in respect of provinces where we do not have a lot of leverage in terms of the working relationship. So you must understand that this is at the prerogative of municipalities. They will not necessarily give us the co-location, they will not necessarily give us the funding, but out of a good relationship and the willingness of municipalities, then this relationship arises. But in areas or provinces or municipalities where there seems not to be a lot of activities in terms of a working relationship, we can ask the assistance, or we are asking for the assistance of the honorable members, especially in their constituencies, to assist us. The 18 cooperatives and the fact that the cooperatives are doomed. Let me explain the fact that one of the mandates that CEDA was given is to assist small enterprises, including cooperatives, is captured in the Act. And the community public-private partnership is a model that DTI tested over a period of 6 years. And one of the criteria that this model talks about, it talks to issues of sustainability. It talks about partnerships, especially with the mainstream in that locality, where you have to make sure that there are certain things such as access to markets. Hence I said that the program that we launched in KwaZulu-Natal in Kokstad, it was a CPP program. It was around agriculture. And as I mentioned, one of the things that we use in the criteria is to make sure that the local municipality or the district municipality is on board, because it must be part of the agreement. Two, there must be issues of sustainability. And three, there must be a market for those products. Hence, I mentioned that in that particular program that we launched, we made sure that the pick and pays locally, the OKs and the boxer stores, are the market where that agricultural project is selling their products. It's working very well. Where all the produce that is coming there, there's also partnership with the Israeli embassy on things like irrigation. They're working with us on production of crops that are of quality that you can sell and which can be sold to the market. So we do understand that there are challenges with cooperatives, but up until such time that government tells us that we do away with cooperatives, we will continue to assist cooperatives. However, we believe that the model that we are using has got a very specific adoption criteria, which is looking at the possibility of market value chains in the local area, issues of sustainability, and so on. The issue of tribal authorities, I must be honest, it's not an area where we've looked at. It's something that we've jotted down, something that we will look at. The co-location in rural areas, I mean, it's a point that I raised earlier on, that the co-location or a partnership in terms of finance, it's entirely upon municipalities to say, okay, given what we have, maybe they would say that we don't have budget, so we can't even finance local LED programs in terms of small business development. However, as this municipality, we do believe that we need to do something around small business development. We do have a building that is standing empty. So what we are asking you to do, Slida, is to come in into this building and establish with your people and your computers and the material and the expertise that you have and start assisting SMME. So that is the kind of arrangement. And it depends entirely upon what kind of resources that particular municipality or municipality has. What there was a question on what CIDA can do to make sure that people do not pay for registration of CCs or cooperatives. Unfortunately, this is the mandate of CIPRO, but because we have a network throughout the country, we do this service free of charge on behalf of CIPRO. So we do not determine what to charge for and what not to charge, but because this is assisting in furthering small business development, we do this service on behalf of CIPRO. The breakdown in terms of the creation of jobs of STP, I will leave that to the STP executives. Why are there no partnerships in Gauteng province? This is a historical matter. When CIDA came into being over the last four, five years, there was no provincial office in Gauteng because there was a belief that there is enough small business development agencies in Gauteng, but that has since changed. We now have a provincial manager that is responsible for Gauteng, who is supposed to deliver on the kind of partnerships like we do in other provinces. People with disabilities, we have a very a good program that we have, which is called MODE for people with disabilities. It's one of the programs that we support in terms of people with disabilities, but the Chief Operating Officer can elaborate on that program. The Finnish government, in terms of the Free State project, we do not have the specifics in terms of that. The Finnish program that we have as CIDA is a program that was it was specific that it was meant for small business development. Then the Department of Trade and Industry said that if it's in terms of small business development, then it must go to CIDA. So if there are any other programs outside of that, we do not have knowledge of. The one that we have was a project of about 60 million over 3 years that was given to us by the Department of Trade and Industry to work with us, and we directed those funds to development of systems on monitoring and evaluation, and in the initial stages, it was used for setting up of offices. Financial training for small enterprises, as part of the training for small businesses, financial training is also one of the It's one of the packages under business development services, but the Chief Operating Officer can also elaborate on how that is separated between financial and business development. The question on Northwest, as I mentioned earlier on, this is entirely up to municipalities or provinces to say whether they are willing to partner with CIDA on in respect of small business development, but we continue to strive to work with them. But if the honourable members feel there are certain areas where they want to direct us, we'll be happy to do that with their assistance, which we would welcome. I will leave the attendance of board meetings with the chairman. There was a question on Palama and linking it with the Learning Academy. I've responded to this question in terms of what is the focus of our Learning Academy. It's internally focused, really focusing on building capacity of our frontline staff. The irregular expenditure of $3 million, the chairman, if the chairman can also respond to that. There was a question on the auditor general and the indicators. I did mention this. What happens is that the auditor general, for the first time, looked at the performance information. And throughout government and the agencies, we did not know exactly what was going to be measured. We, through the board and the strategy and organizational committee, requested assistance from the auditor general as to exactly what was going to be measured. And up until the very end, we were not clear as to what was going to be measured. So there was a mixed understanding in terms of what was going to be measured. Let me make an example. If, say, for example, in terms of our understanding, we are saying to measure the success of how excellent is our services perceived by small businesses, what we did was that we would take a sample of out of the 42 branches, maybe we take 30 out of that, and we derive that target or the achievement of that target by looking at the 30 out of the 42. Then the auditor general says to us that you should have specified that upfront, that in terms of the measurement of that target, you are going to look at 30 out of 42 and not the entire 42. And now these are the differences in understanding of what exactly is going to be measured. So then we came to the conclusion that with the Auditor General that this current financial year, we need to spell that out, that we are going to take 30 out of the 42 instead of the 42. We must specify the sample. We must be very specific as what we mean so that there's common understanding in terms of the indicators. So that is basically what has happened. We continue to improve on the performance information. As I say, it's an area of development. I did mention that in my presentation that we did not understand exactly what was going to be measured and how. But now that we've had what we call a dry run in terms of how they measure performance information, this is exactly what we're focusing on. I spoke about the 75 business advisors that received international training is out of the 167. So 167 is the total number of business advisors we have. So all of them were assessed and graded and trained in terms of the programs that we have. But also 75 of them who are experienced compared to others has been taken for international training. I did explain the Kokstad AmTata question, that it was in Kokstad where we launched the CWP program. The breakdown of provinces and incubators, I will leave to Jayesh to speak about. The progress on the Mtubatuba community, Honorable Chair, we did follow that up a number of times. The acting chief operating officer and the provincial manager attended to those to the problems which were highlighted, and the last report I got was that it's working very well. They are working with those small businesses, but I think one of them was no longer interested in the service. But the one that was interested was, there were two cases that you asked us to follow up. The one we are working with that small enterprise. You asked a question of whether do we have a plan. Yes, we do have a plan. It's captured in our strategy, it's captured in our business plan. I mentioned that one of the areas that the board, over and above what we are doing, is to focus on procurement opportunities for small business, to position whatever clients we have in the incubators and in the CEDA in our database, so that when there are opportunities big opportunities, whether in the energy space or whether it's in the infrastructure space, we must position. So the issue of procurement and access to markets is one area which the board said we must focus on. Also, we must prioritize sectors so that we can be known to be leaders in terms of specific sectors, some of which the incubators are already playing in. The irregular expenditure, the chair will talk about the 3 million and the chief operating officer, chief financial officer can also add to that. The allocation of 488, how much is the breakdown in terms of what was spent in services and so on, is something that we check. However, in the year under review, there was a lot of funds that went into systems which were once off projects and programs, which will skew the total amount that was spent around services, but the CFO can talk about that and the increase in liabilities. The other question was on partnerships with the private sector. Yes, Honorable Chair, this is an area of improvement, but we are working with the private sector. Currently, we're working with Metropolitan on procurement portals and developing a database of all our small businesses, which can be used by any other private sector institution that is looking for to be supplied by small businesses. And also Metropolitan has said that they are also looking at other intervention within the small business space where they can put in funds. APSA is also another partner. It's working very well, especially in the Pietermaritzburg KZN area where there's co-location. You will find that in that office in Pietermaritzburg, there's APSA, there's SIDA, there's local there's a provincial government, there's other agencies that are providing finance. But yes, it's an area of development, especially around procurement opportunities, as I mentioned. The use of consultants, Honorable Chair, is an area that depends solely on the competence of our business advisors. If you recall, last year we mentioned that the business advisors that we have, some of them are not specialized in terms of sectors, where you find that competence is not within SIDA, and therefore they would be sent to service providers who've got the requisite skills. However, as our internal business advisors get these skills through training of specific sectors of advice, then the use of consultants basically is going to be determined by the manner in which our business advisors are graduating to be able to assist people even in advanced interventions which are sector specific and so on. But this is something that we track in terms of their development, their training and their expertise over a period of time. I will hand over to the chair and then to the CFO, Jayesh, and then Rachid.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much.
Before you continue, I'm sorry, Chairperson. I'd want your comment. I'll put a very serious issue. I'm sorry to put it in this fashion. The size of the board. What would be your comment on the size of the board? Under normal circumstances, I don't think SIDA is such a big organization that it would have need 22 board members. What would be your comment?
Well, let me start with that question, Chair, and say linked to non-attendance of 1 or 2 members. The fact of the matter that it is a huge board, and that's a personal view. It doesn't seem discussed necessarily in SIDA, or I don't think the details have been discussed it, but it's a legislative matter. What it requires, therefore, is that feeling the legislation needs to be attended to. But it is a big board, as far as I'm concerned. As a result, when 1 or 3 members stay away, it really has no effect at all on the operations of the company and of the agency. And as a result, as you've seen, the Kamal is progressing, the agency is progressing quite well without one or three members not attending. We do, however, take it serious when people are not available. We do discuss with them, and like every other company required by good practice, we do assessments on an annual basis of board members' performance and the board performance in its entirety. We submit that to the DTI for review. As and when they appoint board members, they also consider that aspect as to whether people are indeed committed and want to participate. And I must say that small business does attract quite a lot of people who want to participate in it, but because people from a distance think you can go in there and make a major change. But as soon as they come in there, they realize that the wheels are turning, but not as exciting as possibly they would expect, and then some simply stay away and attend to other areas of interest. If I were the legislator, indeed I would reduce the board so that it becomes a very manageable board. The question of Palama working together with CEDA on training, Palama looks specifically at the public administration training, which is administrative issues. And there's a particular way in which they work, which would not necessarily accommodate the CEDA interest, which is focused on skills on how to run a business. And at best, we could work with universities as opposed to work with Palama. The 3.6 million rand, the expenditure of it of this money is in context which goes as far as that there was an establishment of a cooperative in the area of Limpopo, Giani. And that cooperative in totality, in total expenditure was about 25 million rand. It was looked at as a cooperative that would create jobs in the rural areas, transfer skills, then you name it all. And machines were acquired from China, which are superb machines, to produce a fiber. And that fiber comes from a plant that is concentrated in the area of Giyan. You couldn't find it anywhere else with that amount of concentration fiber. And it was a new product, new program for DTI and everyone else, and for this country in general. And it became a very difficult project to manage. As we speak, it has been slowed down, and we're in the process of handing over that project to the IDC because we believe the IDC is strategically placed to be able to manage that very ambitious project, I must say. The people that were involved in it did not have a kind of skill that would really turn it around. The kind of financing that was happening in terms of how it was structured was not necessarily helping the situation in that area. Now, what then happened in the process is that the DTI, having appointed CEDA to transfer the funds to LIPSA, who then manage funds in respect of paying the project management company. In the process, established a body which was to oversee the success of this project. The board was then called the STP. I'm correct myself. The board established to run STP, because the what we call today the CEDA technology program, was first housed in the DTI. And the idea of transferring it to CEDA was then muted. And with enthusiasm, the DTI and CEDA established a committee which was supposed to be a board that managed the STP program. Now, that committee, that board, and I'll refer to it as a committee, in the context of theater, took a decision at some point that some money needed to be paid to the manager, project manager of this project, and sort of bypassed a line of transfer of funds where CIDA was supposed to transfer to LITSA and then LITSA pay the project manager. And unfortunately, the manager, or creative manager at the time, did not follow the necessary procedure, which would have meant, hold on, even while you're in a hurry, the project is under threat, I still have to transfer to LITSA and for LITSA to pay you. He then decided to pay direct to the project manager. Hence, in terms of that chronology of events, it became from us an irregular expenditure, and I think the CFO and the Auditor General agree with that terminology. And for our side, we then say, yes, it's irregular, but it's irrecoverable. But it will be then accounted for at the level of LITSA. The entire project will be accounted for at the level of LITSA. We then, because we expended that money, expended to the project manager, were forced by the Auditor General to account for that 3.6 million. And the Auditor General said, you're not even supposed to. Therefore, it's irregular expenditure. We then had to take appropriate actions to correct this, which actually resulted in the parting of ways with the then executive manager of STP, who is no longer part of CIDA as we speak. But like I said, the context therefore is that that project is now being handed over to the IDC to try and make like a success of it. And lastly, Chair, I think the plan to make small business a very serious business in South Africa, it needs to be a campaign of this country. It can't just be just left to see the. It really needs to be a campaign of this country. We've done all sorts of things. We've put policies in place, programs in place, but there are no strategic goals, strategic economic and transformative goals that this country has with respect to small business. We've simply left it to the compliance by companies. It's just one of those things that they can do when they're bought or they want to get points for their transformative targets. But there is no one you can ask who can really elaborate and put it very clear to say this is the goal with respect to small business in this country, and I think this country still needs that. Thank you.
I'd like to respond to the question with regard to the interest. The member is quite correct to say that we have earned quite a large sum of interest this year. And I think the response, maybe if I can ask the members to please page to note 4 in our annual report on page 98. There you'll see that our cash reserves are short-term cash reserves, and that they invested in call accounts, current call accounts. And then you'll also see that the cash reserves at the end of 2009 amounted to 206 million rand and reduced to 162 million rand. The reason for that is that at the end of 2008-09, CIDA had accumulated profit of 108 million rand or reserve, which we obtained National Treasury's approval to retain for utilization in future years. That's also the reason why in the 2009-10 financial year, on our income statement or statement of financial performance, I'll quickly page you to that, on page 82, the organization made a deficit this financial year of 36.676 million, and that's an indication that we are utilizing the surplus accumulated in the previous financial year. So for the next two financial years, we'll probably also see a deficit on our income statement or statement of financial performance in order to utilize the retained surplus. That explanation is also very nicely linked to slide 11 of the CEO. Thanks, CEO. If one looks at our funding for future years, if one compares the CEDA line, the 10-11 line, the 385 to 11-12 year, 394, one can see that that increase in our funding is only a mere 2.4%. Increase in the next financial year, the 394 to the 405, is a mere 2.87%. So one can clearly see that with that percentage increase in terms of future funding, we won't even be able to support our increase in salaries. Therefore, we intend to utilize the surplus retained in the 2008-09 financial year. Thank you. Then in terms of the question relating to the percentage of staff expenditure, one, it adds up to around about a 35%. Even if one look at our current expenditure, we're running below 40% even in our current year expenditure, which is fairly low for a service-based organization. One usually in general trend is around about between 40 to 60% in the service delivery industry. I think the CEO and the chairperson alluded to the fact that CEDA has done a lot to capacitate our internal service delivery capacity in terms of the training provided to our BAs, etc. We are moving over to providing more services in-house, and we expect probably that that percentage would increase over a period of time where we would have a larger spend on personnel as opposed to program expenditure because of the fact that we will be delivering the services in-house. If I roughly look, and I think the CEO is very correct to say that the expenditure is slightly skewed in this financial year because of the large amount of donor funding received and also big projects that we have in terms of the establishment of IT infrastructure, etc. But in general, we're working on percentages of 45% directly, so 35 staff, which is actually service delivery linked as well, 45 directly in terms of program expenditure, where SMEs gain direct access to that. That's coming to about 80% of our total expenditure going directly to SMEs in some or the other way, and which leaves us with 20%, which relates to our infrastructure costs, our buildings across the network, CEDA network, as well as other administrative costs. So we're running about on an 80-20 percentage in terms of that. Then the question with regards to the increase in liabilities. The consolidated increase in liabilities, maybe, sorry, I should say it's to the page. Consolidated increase in liabilities comes to about 3.4 million rand, of which approximately 2.9 million relates to the increase in operating lease liabilities. Now, that is because of a general increase in terms of buildings, where the rent that we pay to our landlords go up with an inflation rate increase, and this is just the smoothing effect thereof, so it would go up more or less with inflation for on a year-on-year basis. And the other portion of the increase relates to the provision of bonus, which the percentage goes up annually because of the fact that salary increased more or less with 7% on average year on year. So that's the reason for the increase, Chair. Thank you so much.
Honourable Chairperson and committee members. Well, the questions regarding CEDA Technology, there was a question asked on the staff of the program. All the staff members of the CEDA Technology program have been transferred over to CEDA, and the budget allocation as per the MTF has also been allocated to CEDA, which is in slide 11. You'll see the 76 million for 2010-11. However, committee members, I'd like to also highlight the fact that it jumps from 76 million to 110 million the following year because of the fact that STP itself was also a merger of other institutions, and the DTI has recognized that and has also inflated our budget because previously STP used to get funding from Department of Science and Technology, co-funding with Department of Trade and Industry, and that component has also been rectified for the following year. The question regarding the 1,150 jobs, Chairperson, that translates to 6,778 jobs, which includes direct, indirect, and casual jobs. And of those 6,778 jobs, 3,319 of those jobs were created in our agriculture incubators, especially in the Mpumalanga region. And they were created mainly from women-owned businesses. 48% of the agricultural-owned businesses are women-owned businesses. Regarding the of the jobs that actually pertain to people with disabilities, I don't have the correct figure for that. However, I can actually highlight that we actually, the program itself has trained about 32 people with hearing disabilities in furniture manufacturing in the interest of making them into entrepreneurs. So that program at the moment is still under monitoring. The question regarding the why we're still in talks with various local municipalities or provincial governments in terms of creating incubators, one of the things is that incubation is part of the LED strategy in terms of local economic development. And hence, we need to align ourselves with the municipality strategy and what provincial governments actually have in the plans for their necessary growth paths. So we're highly dependent on various provincial government departments and municipalities, especially when they're creating cluster environments, because incubation forms part of the cluster to close the pipeline in terms of SMM development. So that's kind of one of the challenges that when one has in terms of waiting for that. The question regarding the breakdown of our various incubators and the sectors they are in, Chairperson, if you can bear with me, it's a kind of a lengthy on the 30 incubators. We have a chemicals incubator in Portland.
Can you submit the copies?
Okay,
we'll
do
this.
We'll do this for Chairperson. There was a question of a new incubator that we want to create in the Eastern Cape region. We're currently in negotiations, or we're currently engaging, and we're doing a scoping exercise with the Agricultural Development Agency in the Mount Elif area to create a kind of a mixed incubator based with agriculture and what's the strength of the area. So that's currently in terms of a scoping exercise. In the Western Cape, the two incubators that are located there are the two furniture incubators called Funtech, and the beneficiaries, all of them, are the SMEs that are there. Our partners or that we engage with is the Stellenbosch University, that has a very strong component of wood manufacturing expertise and forestry development expertise, as the only university or one of two universities that offer courses on forestry development and wood manufacturing, and those are the two incubators there in this thing. And the head office is based in Cape Town. Funtech has 7 branches across the country as well in other provinces. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Chair, let me start with the questions, some of them which needed answers from various members. From the Honourable Member from KZN, there was a question about the Ladysmith branch. To the best of my knowledge, the Ladysmith branch is an old branch. But probably what might have happened is, like, we might have actually moved the offices. I need to just double check on that. In terms of the requirement for the Learning Academy to be training our business advisors, it's predominantly because of the fact that the tools, what we use, the diagnostic methods, what we use, in terms of assessing our client base and providing that support. That's a unique set of tools what we actually train our business advisors on. I do have a list of various institutions we have been working with or who have been partnering with in KZN. They vary from various district municipality to RBM for some of the training sessions what we have provided to Sisonge on this side with some of the training again, but the Department of Economic Affairs has been quite helpful. I'm just looking at some of the bigger actual amounts that has been transacted, and the Durban Chamber of Commerce has been quite helpful in establishing one of the initiatives down there. But we do have the list. We can provide that. In terms of the cooperative itself, it, like Theo mentioned, we have been mandated to promote cooperatives as an option to provide support to rural economic activities and enterprise development initiatives. True, like there is a number of areas that have been happening, but what we have also picked up is through appropriate interventions, we are being able to change them to quite successful ones. So you mentioned the launch area near Matatele in Sisonge Drift. That was quite a successful one with the help of various partners on board, including the Israeli drip irrigation system. We did irrigate about 6 hectares of land. The first set of crops, both cabbage and spinach, which was actually bought by the Pick and Pay group. Much more, there are examples of something which we can see down here in Cape Town as well. In Mpumalele bead works from KwaZulu-Natal. They were a group of crafters who were actually just beading, and when they had their work exhibited, and they're still there in the Gold of Africa Museum here, they were trading almost like 2,500 rand to 3,000 rand. Through the interventions, that has changed to a situation where they're actually doing commissioned work. The turnover now, we're talking about 250,000 rand to 300,000 rand. There's about 10 women who are involved in that. That is another good example where, through appropriate intervention, we can make a difference with the cooperatives. Just moving on to the Limpopo one, CEO has actually touched on. The cooperatives whom we work with, or our clients, we do not, they hardly pay any service fee for getting it registered. Gauteng, honorable member from Gauteng, there were a couple of questions. With respect to the people with disability, we have been working with a group called MOD. There are disabilities that range from your total disability to something what normal people wouldn't even recognize as a disability. What we have done is we have identified this group of individuals. We have trained them in various entrepreneurial opportunities and helped them to set up smaller operations themselves. During the current year, we have also started translating some of our material into Braille, starting with our initial brochures. We have actually translated into Braille. We have got an agreement with the National Council for Blind, and just before I came off here, I had actually signed off on the National Council for the Deaf. We are starting to work more in this area. There were a couple of questions from Free State. I also need to just double check on that welcome situation because I'm not fully aware of that. We will definitely check on it and we can get back to you on that. In terms of the number of people who are actually trained in terms of the financial systems and the likes, there are two sets there. One is our direct training, like which happens through the business training, startup one and startup two. At startup one level, we are just looking at the very fundamentals of financial training, like how to actually cost, how to actually budget, what you should be looking at in terms of when you're starting up a business. By the time you get to that next level, we are looking at a little bit more in-depth understanding of the financial statements, and what are the things what you should be looking at in terms of your cash flow management, and it moves progressively. That is our regular training to the SMEs. In terms of the interventions itself, what we have provided from the clients whom we have worked with last year, about 12% of the services provided last year has been in the area of financial services, you know, training in terms of getting people up to speed in financial areas. Then the Mpumalanga one, the Melalani area and the rural areas, I saw the question coming from the honorable member from Northwest as well. How would we actually go to the rural areas and extend the reach? There are two approaches what we have taken so far. One is in terms of the mobile units which actually goes into the rural areas. Second approach is in terms of the number of regional facilitators we have in the province, who actually goes to these rural areas and sit down with the communities to identify the opportunities and assist them further. So we do actually look at that. Again, honorable member from Eastern Cape, I do have a list of a number of partners whom we have actually engaged. What we have realized is, in terms of the co-location, when we talk about the co-location, what we are speaking about is extending the CEDA services which are requested by the entrepreneurial community in those areas. And that's what we have been doing. And I must say, Eastern Cape has been extremely helpful in extending that reach in number of district municipalities. And in most instances, it would be one or two staff members who are jointly funded, either from the municipality side or from CEDA side, with cost sharing, who would offer most of the CEDA services in terms of the technical support and the counseling and whatnot. That's what we have been doing. The Kokstad, that's actually near Matatiele, a lot more closer to Matatiele, and it's almost in the midpoint, that project where we actually launched our initiative, that's in Songhe district, which is the bordering district to Matatiele. In terms of the Western Cape, no, that was the Ashes one, I'm sorry. I think that was. Again, just from the final question from Chair, there was just again the remark about the proximity and how we actually go to those faraway places. Again, like I mentioned earlier, through our regional facilitators and through our mobile units. In terms of people having to come to the branches for a 3-minute consultation, we have picked up one or two instances like that, and what we are doing is, wherever possible, like if it is an initial information provision, what is required, we would actually have planned information sessions, which avoids the startup people having to travel for, like we would actually have these sessions in those proximities directly. Where the consultants need to intervene are a little bit more extensive consultation, identifying what should be the areas of improvement within an SME activity, and that would be an extended engagement. And just one, you know, that is about it from my side, if I remember correctly.
You can switch off the mic. Yeah, I know there are follow-ups, you know. I want to start this way. This is someone. So it's Honorable Liz, Honorable Mguni, Honorable Abraham, Honorable Adam, and Honorable Mguni, Nyambi.
Okay, my question is just on the last one.
Okay.
They were still talking about a partnership with Israel that the Archbishop Desmond Tutu knows about.
Before you do some, follow up, I want to give to the CFO of the PTI.
Thank you, Chair. I think just to support what the chairperson said, in terms of the board representation, one of the criteria in the Act is that we have to look at geographic spread. And that's one of the things that we do, and because the experience has taught us that where we have members on the CEDA board from a particular province, the relationship between the CEDA and that province is really enhanced. And so that is one of the considerations that we've taken up in the appointment of the new board. The minister has also appointed a task team to conduct a review of the SMME space. The task team has appointed, he just had his first meeting in terms of briefing them, and I think we are anticipating a report either in the last quarter of this financial year or the first quarter of the 11-12 financial year. So he's asked the parameters of that is to look at the institutions, at the support programs that we have to find out, are they really working, and if not, what are some of those challenges. So that task team is currently in place and work has already started. Then I just wanted to comment in terms of performance information. I think the report from the Auditor General this year has been quite a startling one, I think, for both national departments and agencies. It's the first time that we've had to deal with something like this, and we have a mechanism in place where the DTI's CFO and the CFO of CFOs of all our county agencies are present, and they are dealing with how can we actually then start fine-tuning and enhancing performance indicators and also keeping track of progress and the collection of evidence as required by the Auditor General. Thank you, Chair.
Remind me to comment before we finish about the comments about the Auditor General. And then Honorable Lee, Nguni, and Nyambi. And the honorable member who was busy somewhere, you know, because he's preparing for something, he can introduce himself.
It seems you know more than myself about my movements, Mr. Chair. Kenneth Sinclair, Northern Cape.
Honorable Liz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman, I don't want to get into a debate about provincial boundaries, but clearly the project is in Sisonke and not in Matatiel. But Matatiel perhaps should be in Sisonke. Mr. Chairman, we won't go down that route. It's interesting, the comment about the Auditor General. I just thought that an audit fee of $2.1 million was quite excessive. And I was wondering how the CFO felt about that when she got the bill. It is a high fee for a relatively small set of financials. I was wondering, you did, Mr. Chairman, we did look at the cash and cash equivalents. I was wondering why we were running a $1.9 million OD when we had the $163 million in the call account. There obviously must have been a reason, but I can't see it straight away. And then in accounts receivable, why are there credit balances reflected as accounts receivable? And what bad debts are there? Are these bad debts related to what the chair of the board mentioned about the Giani project, or are there other bad debts? I would think they're not, because the ones... And what do you keep in your stores, your communal consumable stores, which is valued at 400,000 rand? I'm sure it's not paper and stationery at that value. You've got contingent liabilities, one being the CCMA of 4.2 million. What are the details of those possible, or those, I must say, I presume the CCMA is considering some issues of past or present employees, and then suppliers of 1.26 million. Some more detail on that. We've talked about the board, and I'm glad to see the CEO is paid more than I am. Then in terms of the cost, you don't need to respond, CEO. You can make a rude response, and I'll have to take it, because I have to take what I give, so. Let her say that, because I'm sure that's an appropriate response for her to make. Mr. Chairman, the question of costs is indeed a vexed one, and in both cases where examples have been given of success, you've highlighted marketing. And I think that is critical. Co-ops, which have worked historically, and we're talking about co-ops that have existed for white farmers over 100 years, they've all concentrated on marketing and buying, not on production. Production is always an entrepreneurial area. And that kind of co-op, if that's where you're headed, then you have my full support. But I'm a little bit concerned about the Sasanke co-op, where it's a kind of agricultural co-op, and I'm wondering if I am one of the members and I get to the field at 10 o'clock in the morning and one of the other members has been there since 7 o'clock, that's when the conflicts start coming in. And how are you managing that area? That would be an interesting one to see how that's managed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to make a follow-up first on the strategic objective number one, where I just want to find out how many of these people are trained, if you do track them, remain in business rather than they fall on the wayside. No, of the 112 for this year, especially, or previous years, how many are still remaining in business? That was my first question earlier on. Chairperson, I just want to disagree, or perhaps make the chairperson aware that she said that there's no strategic economic goal for the SMEs. We all know the strategic goals for government is to reduce poverty, get people employed, reduce inequality. Those are the main objectives of the country, the minimum goals, of which SMEs may play a bigger role in actually fulfilling those. So I really disagree with you saying there's no objectives for SMEs. My other question has been partly answered by the executive manager of STP on what determines the content of your training other than the financials and business planning. For instance, we've got your LEDs that they've got a strategic objective at the local level to do whatever. But when they come into government on a macroeconomic basis, we now want to change, the new growth path. That are those objectives. Now, my question was, how far does that the CEO is still consulting chairperson. my question is, how far does the government objectives, for instance, the new growth path, influence your training content? Because as you know that SMEs, they play a major role, as you said, in the economic development. So they have to, not in competition with government, but they have to be complementary to government and all other businesses. That's why I say, how far does the major government goals, like, for instance, the new growth path, play a role, or how far do they influence your training content? You know that there's a mismatch in economy of skills and necessary skills that are needed. How do you feature that? Other small questions, Chairperson. As you are basically you are a training institution, or you impart training to SMEs, you listed there that there are 10 major risks on page number 125 of your report. What are the risks, those 10 major risks that you're talking about? And lastly, it's just a comment by the CEO. The last two paragraphs of which actually support my argument, I think it will give light to your training content, because I think that she shares the vision that she has, or the institution has, but I just want to find out how far does your vision go into the content of your training to complement government goals or government vision.
Thanks, Chair. The first one is in relation to the irregular expenditure. Of course, we were able to get a detailed explanation, but towards the end, the chairperson said that what led to parting of ways with the manager, and that was it. I think you have to elaborate a bit so that you can understand. I mean, you have this thing, I understand the reason behind the whole thing and how we have handled it, but you just said there was parting of ways, and parting of ways can happen in many ways, so if you can make us to understand before we can have our own wrong conclusions. The second question, Chairperson, you know, with us, maybe it's correct for you to know, you are doing a wonderful job. We are trying this side to make sure that we are doing an effective oversight. Whether it's an advantage or it's a disadvantage, we happen to be in the National Council of Provinces, and in the NCOP, we are serving in many committees, and one committee has got a lot of departments. And that is why I'm saying it's a different arrangement to the National Assembly. Whether it's an advantage or it's a disadvantage is something else. But what is interesting, Chairperson, is that in a situation where you'll have a department, where you'll have AG coming with a finding that is raising something that is not quite fine with whether it's a parastatal or a department, they will say no. Especially when talking about performance indicators, there will be a reason, and the reason is the same. But in a situation where it's different and everything is fine, all is well, without saying you are economic with the truth, I'm not convinced about this thing of performance indicators, how you are saying the AG has dealt with it, because we've had this reason that you are giving, where there was the same finding, but at the same time before that one, we have heard where there was a clean audit and everything was different. So, fortunately, we had an opportunity to interact and wasn't going to interact with the AG and make us to understand those things so that we can be able to see where is the challenge, unlike having a situation like this one. I thought the office of the AG is open 24/7, such that if ever you have to comply and deal with whatever, you can be in a position to deal with that thing to avoid such things. But that is why I'm not convinced about the reason you're keeping. I'm not convinced. The third question, Chair, is, as Chairperson and the CEO quite correctly put it, that when they're dealing with this issue of the board, as legislators, are you happy with the mandate of CEDA in relation to the priorities of government and the needs of your clients? I'd love if you can take us through so that we can be able. I'm happy because the CEO that side is talking about a task team, and for us to be able to engage effectively and assist you to come with whatever that can take us forward, it's better to understand where you stand in terms of the current mandate. The other thing is, do you really have an up-to-date fixed asset register as CEDA? The last one, Chairperson, is linked to the one of EAG. So that 2011, when we're dealing with the annual report, we must not get to a situation where it's about interpretation of some of the things, especially when coming to performance indicators. Now, just because the CEO has indicated that there was the interaction, you can boldly now tell us that there is that common understanding, and in future we won't experience this very same thing and have the very same reasons that are being given now. Is there now a common understanding in terms of that, or do you feel that there's something that we need to do so that we can make sure that we have a common understanding to avoid such a thing? Otherwise, I'm covered in terms of the red chair. Thanks.
Honorable Abrams, your hand is not up. My apologies.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, thank you for the response on the people with a disability. I think you will gather that. I do have a question, so I'd like to know more. What does MOAT stand for? And then also I've noted that you've signed agreements with the National Blind Agency and the Deaf. What about people, paraplegics and quadriplegics, people that maybe got certain limbs and whatnot, and not focusing on people with two hands? Do you have programs for various other disabilities? Thank you.
Anna, wasn't there?
Okay, thank you. Sorry. Yes, I'm a close talker this morning, Chair. Chair, I just want to add my voice regarding the remark that the chairperson of the board made about comprehensive strategy for small entrepreneurs in South Africa. If I look here at the initial front pages of your documents and so on, there's broad reference to that and so on. So I want to share the sentiments of my colleague from the Free State to say that my understanding of CEDA is that you on the turf of exactly this issue. You must play. You can't be selected for Bafana, Bafana, and when you're selected, you say, no, I don't want to play. You are the agency that government has given the mandate to do exactly that. Now, in terms of that, I think it's necessary to just think a bit outside the box for a moment. And I'm just concerned that if I look at the reports here and so on, that there's a lot of emphasis on the establishment of cooperatives and all those types of things. But the minister, the previous minister, Ntuli, was with us, and she bemoaned the fact that only 12% of the cooperatives in South Africa are functional. You know, now, you come and you try to convince us to say, no, the solution to creating jobs in South Africa lies with cooperatives. I say, no, it's not. It's about using the opportunities in the economy that's there. Which brings me to my old song and dance about the Northern Cape. And that is that we mustn't make Johannesburg and Cape Town and Durban more prosperous. We must make the areas in the rural areas more prosperous if we want to succeed as a nation. And in terms of that, there's various opportunities. And if I can just maybe, Chairperson, make one suggestion, that I would suggest that CEDA seriously consider a program to support small entrepreneurs in the green economy. This past weekend, last week, Thursday, Friday, there was this big investor conference in Upington where the Minister of Energy announced the solar park for 150 billion rand. Now, I mean, as a politician, she was good and she overestimated and whatever, but even if 20% of that park materialized, it's still a very, very big investment. Now that, and that is a typical possibility where small entrepreneurs can benefit. So my plea is from CEDA's side, or to CEDA, look at that unit, that possibility. And if I can recommend, even establish a unit that specifically deals with possibilities in the green economy. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Mine would be on the issue of the surplus, you know, why there was a surplus before, why, you know, now you seem to be eating the surplus. Was it at the expense of service besides the interest? Why wouldn't you realize that there is surplus? Why you don't add that to service? The issue of the private sector partnership, I don't think it was correctly answered. Even though you mentioned the metropolitan, but I'm talking of organized business sector. It's there, but there's no partnership. There's Bursa, there's NAFCOP. So metropolitan won't assist as a business. It's not a structure. I'll add into the issue of cooperatives. If I have to speak on the layman's language, it's either the cooperatives are in the ICU or in the mortuary. So why use something, you're trying to revive them there, you know, and you want to use them. I mean, that's the reality. We have said it to the department, DTI, 22,000 cooperatives in South Africa, only 2,000 functional. And out of those 2,000 functional, only 800 are about working. So we've got a problem. We've got to accept that. So we shouldn't be, you know, having a blanket about cooperatives. The issue about the AG that I said to Max, remind me. I also don't agree about this issue, this response about performance indicators. Because some departments and some indicators have got clean audits. If it was happening everywhere, with all the institutions, with all the departments, even with regards to the performance indicators, but why would other institutions have clean audits on top of the performance indicators and others won't? So it shouldn't be a reason. We must just accept it. It has happened. We don't want it to happen in the future. And lastly, just to say that as a committee and as members, we are definitely going to do something to initiate an amendment to the bill about the port. For some time now, we've been preaching that we want to initiate some legislation. I think we are convinced that that port is too overloaded. This is not only CEDA, with other institutions as well. Even if it talks about representation, we've got 9 provinces, 22 is too much as far as we see. We want to assure you that we're going to initiate that legislation to the amendment to the Act, that at least why would we have other ports that have got 14, others 9, and this one 22? CEO and CFO and the chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the issue of cooperatives. As I said, this is in our mandate, and perhaps, Chair, if there's got to be a amendment of legislation, I think this is also if the committee and the members feel that we should not be assisting cooperatives, then it's a matter that the honourable members with your leadership, Chair, must engage the department. But as I said, this is an expectation. It's in our mandate. So as we interpret the Act, we translate it into strategy and programs, and that's why we're assisting cooperatives. We take note of the fact that of marketing within the area of cooperatives, and it's something that we're doing. But the Sisonge thing and why members are fighting and all of that, I think we do realize that there are some challenges with respect to cooperatives, but when we work with them, there are certain things that we look at. As I said, there's an adoption criteria that we use around issues of sustainability, leadership, how long has a cooperative existed. For example, the one in Sisonge District was based on a land restitution program where there is a chief and people that are part of the community. So, as I said, we look at certain things before we work with cooperatives because the issue of sustainability is one of the overriding principles in terms of which cooperatives we work with or not. The contingent liabilities at the CCMA, we've had some cases that arise out of the merger from the previous institutions. But I must be honest that we do not have a breakdown of this. We will get the figures, but I do know that some of them come from the previous cases and some of them are within, but we will provide the breakdown. We did not bring that detail with us. I will ask the CFO to respond to the bad debts and the consumables at 400. The tracking of the people who are trained, we do make sure that we track, we have a client journey approach. In my presentation, I spoke about that our interventions now that we have a new strategy that focuses on impact, we've got to track people that we have assisted over a period of time, either whether it was a training intervention or assistance with marketing or procurement opportunities, but we assist that, hence where we'll be able to report on how many jobs is created and all of that. So yes, we do track people. So out of the people that we reach or walk in, we work with, we register, we check them over a period of time. Hence, we are able to report on issues like how many jobs have been created, because we appreciate that you can't assist someone today and then next week you can track how many jobs have been created. You need to give it a year and so on, so that you are able to report back on what kind of impact did the interventions achieve. In terms of whether we look at the new growth path, yes, in terms of our strategy, we look at the strategies of government. What influences the strategy we translate to the business plan is at the strategies at DTI. Fortunately, at the level of the board, we've got a DTI representative who will know what kind of new strategies. Hence, we're talking about sectors that the board has asked us to elevate in terms of what a DTI has identified as the key sectors for the growth path and so on. We look at the strategies of DTI in terms of IPEP, in terms of the new growth path, and other strategies in terms of making sure that they are, we make them as input into our own strategy. So, and then the top 10 risks as part of the requirements of audit and strategy. We have a process of looking at all the key strategies that we've identified, and as a requirement in terms of King 3 and the PSMA, we are supposed to identify risks that go with all the strategic elements that we've come up with. And then out of that, we list the 10 top risks that the board must track as we unfold the strategy and the business plan. Hence, we talk of top 10 risks. If the committee wants to know what are those top 10 risks, we can make them available, but it is a requirement that you identify the risk, what are the measures that you are going to use to mitigate, who are the people responsible, but they are based on the strategic objectives. Chair, you will deal with the irregular expenditure and the parting of ways a question. The question about the Auditor General, maybe the Chair can also respond to this, because it's a matter that an annual report is a matter that the board has got to approve. As I said, this area, it is a development area, and the Chief Operating Officer of the DTI did allude to this. It is an area that we needed to look at. We were being audited on performance information for the first time. The Auditor General did pick up inconsistencies in the manner in which some of the indicators are interpreted, because there's too many of them. You talk about clients reached, you talk about clients working with, you talk about clients registered. So the interpretation of that and the understanding of that is not necessarily the same, even in the manner in which the Auditor General interpreted that. So what they asked us to do was to limit the number of indicators to strategic indicators and leave the operational ones as an addition, so that should they be required by the department, they are there. But they said that if we are to measure key things like on the impact, we need to limit the number of indicators, because that is where the confusion comes. And secondly, that because there's too many indicators, you find that there's under reporting. You leave out certain information, you elevate some, and it means that we need to limit the number of indicators to the strategic ones which the board can track, whether it's 10 or 15, and then under that we leave the operational indicators which the CEO and ExCo need to focus on. However, that information must be available as soft documents for the Auditor General. So we do admit that this is an area where we need to improve. Hence, the Chief Operating Officer of the DTI said that the chief financial officers of all the agencies that fall under DTI and the DTI are working hard on this area to make sure that it is an area that is improved in the current financial year, so that we have a better report at the end of the financial year. We do have a fixed asset register, which also consists of assets that were stored that came from the erstwhile institutions. It's assets that we are slowly attending to, but the chief financial officer can talk about a plan in terms of dealing with the fixed asset register, but yes, there is a fixed asset register. A program for small businesses in the green economy, we will look into this. It's an area that, as we were looking at the sectors that the board said we must elevate certain sectors, we will be looking at specific sectors. It is one of the sectors that is in the pool of sectors that we are looking at. However, the approval of which sectors we're going to elevate, it's a matter that the board will have to assess and agree upon based on a number of factors, such as whether we do have the capacity as CEDA to play in that sector, whether also in terms of our incubators, it's something that the incubators can take on. So it's something that we will look at. However, it will depend on whether the board approves that and whether we do have capacity to take on certain sectors. Chair, yes, the issue of the organized business, we are having discussions with NAFCOG and what is the other chamber, and FABCOS. NAFCOG and FABCOS, yes. We are also starting to have discussions with Musa, but we do realize that the two important constituencies as far as we are concerned is FABCOS and NAFCOG in terms of the chamber. So, yes, it's an area where we started to look at what kind of programs can we do jointly. But I misunderstood your question. I thought you were just talking about the private sector in general. The issue of cooperatives, Chair, Honourable Chair, as I said, it's a mandate in our legislation. So for us to get out of that, it will have to be an instruction from the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you once more, Chair. The parking of ways simply means that due to irregular expenditure, there's a prescribed way of how you would respond, both from a management and a board point of view. And this matter led to a disciplinary hearing process, and the disciplinary hearing process found the then executive on the wrong side, and the very unfortunate part is that an official who still did not feel that he was on the wrong side of the administration, sound administration. So there was no handshake. We need to emphasize that. The PC found him wrong, and he had to then leave. And again, just to emphasize the point on the issue of performance indicators. Performance indicators, performance audit is a new thing where the Auditor General is concerned. So it's a learning area for all of us, including the Auditor General, state that. And hence we're not very serious as a report about it, because we're working together with the Auditor General to improve how we'd set the targets, and then how we report on, so that you get very content information that is quite helpful. But we do accept the criticism that possibly we need to be more creative and more intelligent. However, whatever we say, the Auditor General needs to agree to. Otherwise, if we don't agree with the Auditor General now as to how we're going to be audited, there is going to be a finding at the end of the financial year. So we're wary of that, so we're working together with the Water General. And we'd actually, at some point, called the Water General to come and do an interim audit, try to confirm that some of the indicators we're putting together are things that he would look at and be happy with. Because we're also afraid of the situation where we are quite comfortable and confident what we put in place, and come the Water General at the end and say, no, I don't like that. So want to lock them in from the onset that whatever we put in place, they agree with us. I think the private sector issue has been answered, and would take it from our stakeholder point of view. We've identified, Chair, recently that we need to have much robust relationship with the organized business. And the last part really about cooperatives being in the IC or the mortuary. Small business is a very difficult area, Chair, in general, besides talking about cooperatives. I mean, we meet 112 people who have been stung by the idea of being entrepreneurs and establishing enterprises. We register 50-something thousand, we end up working with 23,000. I mean, that conversion rate simply tells us that there's a huge number of people who simply are seeking income as opposed to really come in and drive enterprise, but they're not necessarily entrepreneurs. Now, that will not be different when you go to cooperatives. What complicates in cooperatives, as the Honourable Member said, is that then you have different interests, different attitudes and so forth, and that's a very difficult thing to manage. We have actually been looking at the issue of cooperatives and said, if we're not careful, it becomes a total failure. And I think we're getting a sound that there is realization in general that there could be, we're heading for a failure if we don't think careful on how we treat cooperatives. It is not necessarily one of those things we're going to be depending on to create and sustain enterprises in South Africa. It is one of those that we've identified. But the key driver to us now is partnership with the departments that have major projects in this country, private sector, the CEO has a task to actually go out there and speak to the private sector, state-owned enterprises that have got measure, billions of rands that they've spent. And I say, that is where we need to go and assist entrepreneurs. So they don't repeat what used to be done in the past, where you trade a whole lot of it, people to lay bricks, but there were no houses to be built. And I think that's what we're careful with. And I think I take also the comment made by a member that there are strategic objectives of government. We align. We are working within. You cannot find us outside of it. But for small business, as a huge target of this company, to say by such and such a date we want so many SMEs producing in these industries and so forth, that we don't have. And I think that's what we're talking to more than saying that we're confused, we're not even sure what we're doing. I think government objectives are the objectives that we're driving. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the paying of the AD's fees, I don't know, but how happy can one be to pay a creditor? Usually nobody's happy to do that. But in all fairness, the ratio of their fees to total expenditure comes to around about 0.39%. I haven't seen the latest statistics, but usually when it's around about between 0.5% to 1%, one can expect it to be reasonable. Their fees are, of course, time-driven and at fixed rates as determined by the AG. I think also that this year we've felt a bit of a hit in terms of the time spent on the auditing of performance information. I think a lot has been said in that regard. And we also realized, as the Chairperson said, that it's a new process for the AG. And we actually came to some sort of a negotiation where we said, listen, we had mistakes on our side, but you also knew in this process and how we're going to actually meet one another. And quite a considerable amount of the audit fee was actually written off as a result of that negotiation. Then with regards to the 1.9 million overdraft, that is a temporary overdraft. And I think I can actually prove that I'm telling the truth if one looks at note 20 on page 114. We members can clearly see that we've only paid 27,000 rand of interest for the whole year under review. And that included interest paid to service providers such as Telkom, and everybody knows that Telkom charges you interest if you pay one day late. So that's merely a temporarily balance, and it was corrected the day after the 31st of March. Accounts receivable, the negative balances enclosed in the accounts, accounts receivable, that relates to the provision as disclosed on page 99. So we first list the accounts receivable, and then we indicate the amount of the provision, which reconciles with the disclosure on page 99. To understand the bad debt, one has to also understand the nature of the accounts receivable. The accounts receivable, we're not a trade, we don't trade. We don't have trade receivables. They consist mainly out of staff-related debtors, such as, for example, relocation costs, payments made in advance. Okay, that's sort of not a staff-related one. And then we also have study loans and staff travel advances, for example. In the year under review, an amount of 170,000 rand was discovered to be irrecoverable. So most of that relates to previous, the chairperson and the CEO said that CEDA was actually established by the combining of several other organizations in the past. And these related to staff debtors where we followed the deck up, and we have now been notified by lawyers to say that these amounts are not economically viable to recover. They're far less than 5,000 rand per case, for example, and that it's, the legal fees are going to exceed the economical benefit in that regard. Subsequent to that, the practice in terms of staff advances has ceased to exist, so internal controls in that regard was also strengthened. We've also looked at the HR processes in that regard, and recently EDSCO also approved the signing of a contractual agreement by all employees so that you authorize that the money owed to the organization be deducted from your salary with the last payment. So I think processes was also enhanced in that regard to prevent this happening in future. In terms of consumables, the total value of approximately 400,000 rand consists out of stationery and IT consumables across national office, SCP, 9 provincial offices, 42 branches. Therefore, I think it's quite a number of offices that's actually covered within the 400,000. In terms of contingent liability, a specific reference to the suppliers of 1.26 million rand. Unfortunately, accounting practice does not allow to disclose your contingent receivables. We always look at the worst case scenario and disclose our liabilities. CEDA in these cases against the suppliers have counterclaims exceeding 1.26 million. It's just not disclosed in terms of accounting practice. Then in terms of the surplus that we disclosed in note 2 on page 96, I think maybe I should just ask members to turn to that specific note. There one can clearly see that our initial funding in 2009 amounted to 329,000. Separately disclosed from that was a grant adjustment from the VTI to the value of 155 million rand. We only received that grant adjustment of 155 million rand in the last quarter of the 2008-09 financial year. Therefore, it was impossible to spend that amount before the end of the financial year. That's why we requested to retain 108 million rand for service delivery. And upon the question, was SMMEs disadvantaged in terms of service delivery? And the answer is no, because that amount is spent in the same ratio as what we declared in terms of previous years, as well as what the ratio expenditure was in 2008-09. Then the member, honourable member, with the question of the fixed asset register, thank you so much for that question. I think you asked the same question last year, and last year I had a quite a vague response to that, responding affirmative, but not as confident as this year. This year we've done, this is a specific focus area in our financial management improvement plan in our year two thereof. we've contracted additional resources to actually do a comprehensive exercise across all our provincial offices, SDC, and the 42 branch offices. This process has led to an excess of 4,000 assets being brought to book, which was never recorded on a fixed asset register. The impact of that in terms of our financial statements has led to the recording of 7.6 million rand being recorded in the balance sheet, of assets being re-evaluated and values attached to it and recorded in fixed asset registers. I've already had two or three groups of our staff being trained on the new asset word that we've acquired, and the implementation is expected before the end of November. This process, over and above leading to a strengthening of the balance sheet, accountability established, the responsibility has now been assigned to each and every official in every branch and every location in terms of the assets, print out assets under that specific person's direct control and supervision. This also led to an integrated asset management. We have decentralized input, but centralized from national office review and monitoring of changes affected to the fixed asset register. So thank you again.
So just to elaborate further on this, the failure rate of how many of our SMEs actually end up remaining in business. I think the study showed that about 90% of businesses do not make it to the 10th year of operation. What we're doing, as the CEO said, is to really track, once you have the client, after finish intervention, whether it's training or business advice or market access, is every 6 months to really check if that client is still making, is still trading and is employing people. And how we do this is the business advisor would actually visit the client, or the client comes in to have an assessment, right, where is your business? We get a signed income statement from the client, or actually a signed statement saying, I'm now employing so many people. And that we allow the 6 months for after a project. Then after every year, we still check if the client's operation. And that is when after every year, we'll be able to see what is the failure rate or the survival rate of SMEs. And we'll take this figure and look at studies like the GEM report or studies that are done in the country. And for as long as our clients have got a better chance of surviving than the general population out there, which is not helped by CEDA, then that's where we can measure our impact leads to greater chances of survival for SMEs.
Okay, thanks very much. I can foresee without, you know, judging that you won't take any further questions. But you as leader, I think you have got a huge responsibility in South Africa. Very huge. You are now a developmental agency. And next time we meet, I would really want to see and hear how far you have gone in helping small businesses in rural areas. 90% of your report should be with regards to rural areas as the core, you know, main objective of government to develop the rural areas. So from now on, we have said it openly. Would want to see in all those small towns, get all those people out of the offices into the rural areas. We'll call them as members in our constituencies to go to all these small areas. So next time we meet, it will only be about how far have we gone in assisting the development of SMEs in rural areas. And thanks very much to the officials from the department, the CFO and all other officials. It really shows the interest that you have in one of your entities. And thanks very much for the responses, and well done for the good report that you got. And hope you improve on it. Except that CFO, contracting a service provider to do the asset register, I'm not sure whether you're getting a consultant to do an asset register. We should minimize the use of consultants, please. We'd rather get the people in those offices to write the asset. But thanks very much to Saroj, our liaising officer, Thanks very much. We get all the information. And I'll do a follow-up on the two reports of Mduba Duba. That is why I didn't want to contact them with some members. I don't know, it was Honorable Mguni. We were in that meeting at Mduba Duba. I'll do a follow-up. The other one who said is no longer interested is Mr. Kuzwayo. That's the one who drove 70 kilometers for a 3 minutes meeting. And now, has had enough. He'll try another agency. But members, please engage CETA. Want to load them with work from now on until next time we meet them. Thanks very much. The meeting stands adjourned.
Yeah, that's what I